Deutsche Welle Africa Link.
This is DW's Africa Link, and it's always a pleasure being in your company. I am Abubakar Jallo.
And I'm Jane Ayeko Kumert in Bonn, Germany. Remember, we are live on Facebook, so do join the conversation there too.
Now coming up, France holds a summit for European and African leaders to drum up support for a new counter-terrorism force in the Sahel.
The importance of the meeting was to turn the early start made on establishing and operating the G5 force into a proper organizational structure. It wasn't just about raising money.
In South Africa's President Jacob Zuma's never-ending problems, former public protector Thuli Madonsela welcomes the court's decision to dismiss Zuma's attempts to avoid implementing the public protector's remedial action.
This kind of decision by a court is trying to say to people, please pause, please think about implications for the use of taxpayers' monies.
These stories plus all of your responses coming up shortly, but first a roundup of world news.
I'm Sarah Steffen with DW News. French President Emmanuel Macron has hosted African and European leaders in Paris to drum up support for new measures against terrorism in the Sahel region. The so-called G5 Sahel countries Burkina Faso, Mali, Mauritania, Niger and Chad are among the world's poorest. They came together in 2014 to form a military alliance to combat terrorism and organized crime. France and Germany have helped set up the Sahel G5 force. Saudi Arabia has pledged $100 million, while the United Arab Emirates offered $30 million. German Chancellor Angela Merkel, who also attended the meeting aimed at securing funding for this new counter-terrorism force, pledged support as well.
The African heads of state and government have made it very clear that it's a very pressing issue. Islamist terror is spreading and we can't wait. We have to act quickly in fighting this fight.
Islamic leaders have urged the world to recognize occupied East Jerusalem as the capital of Palestine. It counters the move by U.S. President Donald Trump last week to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas said the U.S. no longer had any role to play in the peace process. He said he was also seeking full U.N. membership for Palestine.
U.S. President Donald Trump's recognition of Jerusalem as Israel's capital and the decision and order to move the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem is a clear breach of international laws and signed agreements.
South Africa's High Court ruled President Jacob Zuma is to set up a judicial inquiry into state influence within 30 days. The court upheld recommendations by South Africa's anti-graft watchdog calling for an inquiry, which Zuma had challenged. Zuma himself is under fire for alleged corruption. Zuma's friends, the influential Gupta family, have come under scrutiny for allegedly influencing the appointment of ministers. You're listening to DW News, coming to you from Bonn, Germany. Online, we at dw.com. Democratic candidate Doug Jones has won against Republican candidate Roy Moore in a tight race over a seat in the U.S. Senate in the state of Alabama. Republican Moore was backed by U.S. President Donald Trump despite accusations of sexual misconduct. Moore lost in the deeply conservative state. Jones is the first Democratic candidate to win in Alabama in 25 years. German Chancellor Angela Merkel and Social Democrat leader Martin Schulz were expected to meet on Wednesday evening to discuss a potential extension of their party's ruling coalition. Both parties had lost substantially in elections in September. Social Democrat leader Schulz had initially ruled out becoming Merkel's junior partner again. The runoff in Liberia's presidential elections has been scheduled for December 26th. That means the final round of voting between incumbent Vice President Joseph Boakai and soccer star George Weah can take place after it was delayed for a month by complaints of fraud. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Sarah Steffen.
You You're listening to DW's Africa Link, coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I'm Jane Ayeko Kimet.
And I am Abubakar Jalo. And as always, we are live on Facebook, so leave us a comment there. Now, French President Emmanuel Macron has hosted a group of African and European leaders, including German Chancellor Angela Merkel, to drum up support for a new counter-terrorism force in the Sahel.
2 years in the planning, the force brings together troops from Burkina Faso, Chad, Mali, Mauritania and Niger in a desert region the size of Europe. Former colonial power France is currently leading a counter-terrorism operations there through its 4,000-strong Burkina force. But it is keen to share the burden because its military is engaged in various fronts.
The ambitious goal is to have 5,000 local troops operated by mid-2018, wrestling back border areas from jihadists, including a local Al-Qaeda affiliate. Paul Melly is the Associate Fellow of the Africa Programme of Chatham House in the UK. I started by asking him about the main focus of the meeting.
I think the importance of the meeting was to turn the early start made on establishing and operating the G5 force into a proper organizational structure. It wasn't just about raising money, though obviously that helped, but it was about getting in place the basic administrative arrangements. Who will the military force be formally responsible to? Which agency will oversee it? Which organization will receive the money that's supposed to pay for it? All those sort of practical arrangements.
You said, Paul, that on the financial front, that this summit was a bit of a success, but so far we've seen that French President Emmanuel Macron has been expressing frustration over delays of this meeting. They haven't actually got the amount of money that they needed, even though the US and the EU have pledged 60 million euros each. And now today the Saudis have come out saying that they are pledging 100 million euros. But France says it needs 400 million euros for this very ambitious project.
I think today probably what they got nailed down was most of the financing needed for the first year, or most of the first year, so that getting the force fully operational and launching major operations in the next few months will be possible. So I've seen an estimate that they need 250 million euros for the first year's operation. So I guess that would take them through till at least mid or late 2018.
How is this front line going to look like? How is the fighting going to look like? Because now we understand that France has about 4,000 strong force called the Barkhane already in the Sahel, and the UN has about 12,000 MONUSCA peacekeepers operating in Mali.
Well, I think they're playing different roles, actually. So the Barkhane force is scattered right across the Sahara and the Sahel in a number of bases, and its main job up to now has been to tackle the jihadist groups, including Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb, Ansardine, Al-Morabitoun, groups like that, operating in the very north of the Sahel or in the Sahara for the most part. Then MINUSMA, the UN peacekeeping force in Mali, is not specifically engaged in actively fighting terrorist groups. The third role, which will fall to the G5 force, is to tackle quite often locally rooted jihadist groups, particularly in the border areas.
That was Paul Melly speaking to me earlier from London.
And on that note, some people have been commenting on that story. For instance, Ramzi Jassi Jallo says, Africa shouldn't always look up to foreign support because we can sometimes find support within our neighbor countries on the continent. And Ramadan Mujani says, Africa should be careful with France and allies. They may worsen the situation just like they did in Libya.
We have a lot of responses and I guess we'll come back to some of them.
Certainly.
Definitely. Now we move on. Today, Islamic nations from around the world have met in Istanbul for an emergency summit. They united against US President Donald Trump, who had taken the decision to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. Tessa Walter has the latest.
Today, all 57 member states of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation have made a joint statement calling on the world to recognize the State of Palestine and East Jerusalem as its occupied capital. From Istanbul, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan had this to say.
Uluslararası hukuka I invite all the countries backing international law and fairness to recognize Jerusalem as the occupied capital of Palestine. We cannot delay this any longer.
Palestine's President Mohamed Abbas used a summit to condemn U.S. President Donald Trump's decision once more.
These unilateral mistaken steps will encourage extremist and non-extremist groups to turn the conflict from a political conflict to a religious one.
Abbas said that he will seek the UN General Assembly vote to nullify Israel's status at the UN. He will additionally ask for full Palestine membership at the organization.
Tessa Walter reporting.
And as those Islamic presidents, they are joined against U.S. President, South African President Jacob Zuma is battling his unending problems. Today, the North Gauteng High Court dismissed President Jacob Zuma's attempt to avoid implementing the Public Protector's remedial action following allegations of state corruption implicating him, cabinet ministers, the Gupta family and other government officers.
Former Public Protector Tuli Madonsela ordered Zuma to ask the Chief Justice to appoint a judge who will preside over the Commission of Inquiry investigating all the allegations in the state capture report. But Zuma went to court arguing that it is him alone who has the power to appoint such a commission.
And now, as Tuzo Kumalo reports from Johannesburg, Zuma was also found personally liable for paying all the costs in the case.
Handing down judgment at the North Gauteng High Court in Pretoria today, Judge President Dunstan Mlambo said Zuma's attempt to have the recommendations of the report set aside was tantamount to stopping the Public Protector from doing her constitutional duties.
Our view is that the President had no justifiable basis to launch the review application in the circumstances. In doing so, he was reckless and acted unreasonably. This is a proper case where a personal cost order is justified and should be granted.
Former Public Protector Tuli Madonsela, who authored the report and was also at the court today, welcomed the court decision to hold Mr. Zuma personally liable for the legal costs of the case.
This kind of decision by a court is trying to say to people, please pause, please think about implications for the use of taxpayers' monies.
Democratic Alliance Party leader Musi Maimane, who was also at the court, welcomed the judgment, saying the opposition has been vindicated in its assertion that Zuma is corrupt.
It would be important for South Africa and the resources of the people of this country that we get to the bottom of this issue so we can free up those resources to provide services to our people who desperately need them.
Meanwhile, there is no indication if President Zuma intends to challenge the judgment at the Constitutional Court.
Tuso Kumalo in Johannesburg.
And now let's take you to our main story of the day, which is the summit in Paris on the G5 summit there. Some of your responses to that.
Yes, I start with Ben Odele, who says Africa needs to be recolonized. Why must we look up to for foreign support all the time? African leaders should be ashamed of themselves.
And a response here from Bertrand Ayong, who says the only people terrorizing and causing instability in the Sahel region is France and their French Africa policy.
Those are interesting comments there. But we leave it at that. And then we go on to what was our second story there, in which the presidents of Islamic nations have actually joined up against the U.S. president.
This new decision by Washington to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel has caused a lot of storm across the Arab world.
Exactly. And that is also reflected on our social media platforms. Lots of comments have been coming in there.
Let's go to one or two of them, right?
Yes.
We have one here from Betrano Tambio, who says, how much interest is the West having in Africa apart from brain drain, tapping its resources?
And Uchene says, Nigerian President Buhari supports the Palestinian state, but he is afraid to admit it because Biafra is hanging on the wings. It's always interesting to see how listeners try to relate all the stories related with their own situation on the ground.
Definitely. Everyone has interest somewhere. Albert Fambua says the city must not belong to any of the two, but be placed under the UN administration if that is possible.
But that's not all. There's another one here from Nkwen, who says nothing but in full support of Trump. So after all, not everybody's against Trump. There's one there who seems to support him.
Thank you all for your responses. Keep it Africa Link.
And if you're just joining us, you're listening to DW's Africa Link with me, Jane Ayeko-Kemet.
And I am Abubakar Jallo. We are live on Facebook, so leave us your comments there and we will try and get onto them. Still to come in the next 15 minutes, performing arts, how East Africa is using breakdance to promote youth empowerment and job creation.
Art is no longer something that we used to look at as something for the failures, not anymore. So when we see youths getting involved in these performing artists, they are able to think out of the box.
But before that, the International Commission of Jurists says it is worried that Zimbabwe's military-backed new government might not ensure free and fair elections expected mid-2018. Abu, the Geneva-based organization is just not alone, oder?
Indeed, it's not alone. Now, the opposition has embarked on a diplomatic offensive asking the international community not to recognize President Emmerson Mnangagwa in his administration, accusing it of taking power through a coup. DW's Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
Super, Mdara, super. Tupara, nyeseru para.
That was the excitement and euphoria created last month when Zimbabwe's long-serving President Robert Mugabe resigned. Since then, life has returned to normal, but the army which helped President Emmerson Mnangagwa come to power hasn't returned to the barracks. The International Commission of Jurists says that is not allowed in a democracy, and that came out during their meetings.
The stakeholders' meetings generally showed a concern that there had been an overturn of the rule of law with the military involvement in efforts that ultimately led to Mugabe resigning. The expectation, as understood by the International Commission of Jurists, is that the new government needs to do everything that it can to create a basis on which there can be free, fair, and credible elections in the next 8 months so that there can be a full return to civilian authority.
That is Arnold Tsunga, the Africa Director of International Commission of Jurists, or ICJ, speaking to me at the conclusion of his organization's one-week visit to Zimbabwe. The ICJ's visit to the Southern African nation happened at a time when opponents of President Mnangagwa are being harassed and detained by the army on corruption-related charges. Mnangagwa vowed to stamp out corruption during his inauguration last month. But Brian Magari, a respected Roman Catholic priest, says the recent arrest of ZANU-PF officials by the Mnangagwa administration are not anything to take seriously.
They're making sure that they purge rivals from the party. It's clear the people who are being picked up for corruption are not just corrupt, maybe not the most corrupt, but they're not of the dominant faction now. Probably he's looking for a party which responds to him as obediently as the army does.
After being kicked out of the ruling ZANU-PF party and the government to make way for the then First Lady Grace Mugabe, the crocodile, as President Mnangagwa is known by his supporters, got help from the army to depose President Mugabe. And now analysts say he is targeting those that were close to the 93-year-old former leader of Zimbabwe.
Columbus Mavunga in Harare.
Well, Ayeko, that's a major turn from all this expectation that the Zimbabweans had when President Mnangagwa came to power.
Yes, but we do remember, we both recall that at the very beginning when these things unfolded, there were lots of mixed reactions from all over the world. Some were rejoicing while others were like, wait a minute, these are birds of the same feathers.
The expectations were high. Anyways, yes. Let's hear to what a few of you have been saying. Najib Mohammed says, it is a politically unwise for a leader to purge his enemies due to his uninfluential powers. In that case, I don't recognize his government.
And Romeo Adige says, well, the opposition is rather the enemy of the state. How old is the government? They should not listen to the opposition. I think he wants to suggest that the current president should be given a bit of time.
Thanks for all those comments. We'll try and get back to them if we have the time.
On the spot.
Now to something more entertaining and refreshing, and that is music and dance. Breakdance is a style of acrobatic dance originating in the mid-70s, often performed to rap music, usually by youths in the streets, and characterized by intricate footwork, spinning, and headstands, tumbling, and elaborate improvised movements.
Well, in Uganda, the Breakfast Jam, a voluntary organization, has revived breakdance styles not only to entertain but also to educate and empower young people by bringing them together through hip-hop. The aim is to promote positive change. From Kampala, here's Frank Iga.
It's jam-packed with loud music, cheers and pomp here at the YMCA grounds in the capital Kampala during the annual dance competition between Uganda, Kenya and Rwanda. 20 dancers are warming up to battle it out on the dance floor in the Breakfast Jam Finals 2017. Next on stage is Big Girl Key, one of the few girls in the competition. She tells me she's good to go.
For you to qualify to go to the next level, you need to execute a few moves or transitions that lead you to the next level, which is you have to add in footwork, top rock, transitions that get you from the top to going down. Those are like roles judges look at when they're judging your performance or your battle or your solo when you're dancing.
The applause and excitement from the mammoth crowds in attendance is for 11-year-old Sharon Kakuba, aka Big Girl, an inspiration. She's the youngest and center of attraction. Her small size makes her swift and exquisite. I asked her to define her moves.
I have just danced b-boy. All you can call it b-boy, but I'm a big girl. It's a type of dance grouped in top rocks, Indian steps, drops, the footwork, the top rocks, just all.
The heat is on as the crowd cheers for every dancer that steps on the floor. Standing in the queue is 22-year-old B-Boyzy from Kenya. I ask him what could be on his mind.
There is a lot of anxiety and tension going on in B-Boy's mind. My heart is beating like crazy. My heart is beating like never before. At the same time, there is this kind of excitement I can't really explain. The feeling, it's kind of like mixed feeling to get on a big stage and battle it out.
Makawes is seated close to the panel of judges, keenly observing every move of the dancers as he nods his head to the beats. He is the chairman of this Breakfast Jam.
For the young people that are interested in dancing and competing, one thing that I'm saying is that keep doing your thing, keep representing, keep coming out, and use the advantage of being here. Connect with people from these different countries.
Robert Musitwa, the public relations officer for the Ugandan National Cultural Center, was also in attendance. He says the youth today have popularized the performing arts and transformed it into a lucrative industry.
Look at performing art as something which is really important in terms of job creation. Art is no longer something that we used to look at as something for the failures, not anymore. So when we see youths getting involved in these performing artists, they are able to think out of the box. Perfected but not invented. Rhymes from the
ego-driven, self-centered. Entered the fast lane and never got dented. Frank Iga in Kampala. Now, Abu, that's really a very interesting one, isn't it?
It is very, very interesting.
It's one good way to get out of politics. But when is the last time you actually did? And did you even ever dance breakdance?
Well, let me tell you something. I was in hip-hop, but there are four elements in hip-hop.
Uh-huh.
There are the B-boys and the B-girls, which you just heard about.
Okay.
There are also the MCs, the guys who are doing the rapping, the DJs, and also the guys who are doing the graffiti.
Interesting, but were you
I took part in one of them. I wouldn't tell you exactly what that is.
In the streets, did you also perform?
I would tell you that.
Good one.
Living Planet Africa.
Now, in March, Europe resolved to advance initiatives for renewable energies in Africa in line with its wider efforts in the implementation of the 2030 Agenda on Sustainable Development and the Paris Climate Change Agreement. To start with, the EU will invest some 9 billion euros in the Green Project by 2020.
Now, at the One Planet Summit in Paris, French President Emmanuel Macron warned the delegates that the world was not reducing its carbon dioxide emissions fast enough. He said, and I quote, "We are losing the battle." DW's Inke Mills has been telling me just how serious the problem is for Africa.
It is very serious in terms of Africa. It's
probably at the point where it's extremely serious. I mean, we've just come off from COP23, which was held here in Bonn, and a lot of the African delegates I spoke to while I was there really expressed their frustration, extreme frustration, actually, at the fact that nothing is being done. There's been a lot of talk. We know what the risks are. We know what's happening. We know that Africa is more or less been identified as the most vulnerable continent on the planet in terms of climate change. There are so many risks involved. You're talking about drought. You're talking about tropical storms. And when you're talking about adaptation and sustainability, that makes it incredibly difficult for those countries to get on board and really ensure their future. And again, of course, you're talking about this young generation who is growing up there too. They're the ones who are going to be dealing with all of this.
Reflecting back to 2015, when the climate change summit was taking place in Paris, I do remember that member countries did resolve, among others, to limit global warming, like you just pointed out. But also they talked about, you know, curbing carbon emissions. How much of this has been achieved so far?
Nothing has really been achieved so far, so to speak. These are more like long-term goals. And actually, at the moment, what this past COP conference was all about, it was basically looking at the fine print of the Paris Agreement, basically deciding on how to achieve these goals. So the goals are there. We know what we want to do. We know we want to limit this rise in temperature. The second big goal is also to increase adaptation strategies, which is also a very big one in Africa. But the third one, and this really ties to this One and Planet Summit that's being held in France this week, is to basically make it's the financial aspect. So making financial flows across the world consistent with a pathway towards lowering greenhouse gas emissions and improving climate resistance development.
Now, talking about financial flows, what the One Planet Summit has been discussing is investing in companies that do not contribute to global warming. Is it just about money?
We're talking about the trillions of dollars that is going to be needed for investing in sustainable development. And in terms of Africa, it's even more important, because what these companies are basically trying to do, companies, non-governmental organizations, they're trying to basically make transform the finance sector to make it so that these adaptation and sustainable goals can be implemented.
We cannot be talking about climate change without a mention of the United States. We have the US President Donald Trump there saying this whole climate change thing is just a hoax, and we have the young president in France there, putting all his energies there to say we are losing the battle, we got to get things done. How does this relate?
It has power in a sense, in terms of it can withdraw or itself from the Paris Agreement, but you've got companies, you have states, you have cities within the US who are really determined to do their bit. For example, I mentioned the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. That's a US-based foundation, and they're very much committed, especially on the African continent, to providing to green projects there. And of course, on the other side is, you mentioned you have Macron, and One Planet Summit was kind of like his brainchild, so to speak. He's filling the gap. You had that vacuum created by the US when they pulled out of the Paris Agreement. Macron seems to be trying to fill that as best as he can.
Enika Mills bringing us up to date with what the big heads are discussing on climate change, and Africa, of course, being the most vulnerable continent.
And we're going to stay in Paris as well, speaking of climate change there. There was also a conference at the G5 summit, which French President Emmanuel Macron has said that Saudi Arabia pledged to provide $100 million, and then the United Arab Emirates also pledged $30 million to fight jihadi threat in the African Sahel region. The French defense ministry says five countries participating in this G5 Sahel force is to grow into 5,000 strong army by March 2018.
So it's a double fight here. We are talking about combating climate change.
You fight climate and then you fight terrorist threat, all happening in Paris.
It's not bad.
Let's get some responses to that.
Yes, certainly. And we have Adejayo saying here, of course, there is nothing wrong with the West helping to fight terrorism.
And that is in response to a question we ask on Facebook. Should Africa be always looking up to foreign support for help? Menza says, which people engineered the gruesome murder of Gaddafi? Question there.
We don't have to answer that question, but I have another one here coming in from Robert Ibe, who says, Saudi Arabia to fight jihad threat? The same Saudi Arabia accused of sponsoring terrorism. That's rather rhetoric.
Indeed. Thank you all for your responses. It's been a pleasure of having you on the show. I'm Abubakar Jallo.
And I'm Jane Ayeka-Kumet.